You're listening to the voice of Susan Reed singing Where Go the Boats by Robert Louis Stevenson, with a musical setting by Tom Scott. A page from this afternoon's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Every Sunday at 3, WNBC, in conjunction with the Poetry Center of the YW and YMHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Our guests today, Tom Scott, and by transcription, Robert Blossom and Susan Reed. Since WNBC is celebrating a domestic travelcade this weekend, we of Anthology mulled over several ideas on domestic American verse and finally came to the conclusion that we'd like to invite as our guest a man who has not only spun many a fine thread into the overall tapestry of poetry Americana, but who is also a radio and TV commentator, a singer of songs in the folk and popular field, and a composer. Listen. That is the theme music which our guest composed for the radio documentary series, The 38th Parallel. This afternoon, we're going to talk to him about his music and also about the work which he's done in composing musical settings for many distinguished British and American poems. Tom Scott, we're most delighted to have you with us on this American Travelcade edition of Anthology.
Thank you. Should I say Mr. Fleetwood or just Fleetwood?
Either one.
Well, I'm mighty pleased to be here. And I must congratulate you on that show that you do every night, all night long, which has brought so much pleasure to me and so many other in the Somaniacs.
That's very kind of you, but I don't want to take our time this afternoon talking about my show because I could go on forever about that. I think we could also go on forever about some of the things you've done. How did you first get the idea of setting these poems to music?
Well, first, because I am a composer, and second, because I am a singer of folk songs. Folk songs, I think, are highly poetic. I often feel that the words, the lyrical content, is even more important than the music. So it was only natural that through singing so very many songs, I would become highly interested in the words, highly interested in the way words and music are related. And then I've always loved poetry and have been a poetry reader all my life. And then, as a composer, I'm always looking for a text that I can set or for an idea that I can set. I realize that that's controversial. In fact, your eminent producer, Mr. Draper Lewis, said that sometimes there is a controversy as to whether or not poetry should be set to music or whether it should just be read cold. And he said that I might express myself on it.
Yes, we're constantly getting mail about this thing. You know, some saying, stop playing that music behind the poetry, and others saying, oh, we love the music. And then, of course, those who, as you, write special music for the poetry.
Well, I don't think I have anything terribly original to say about that. It is my feeling that music, by virtue of its abstract nature, can weave a meaningful background which will heighten the meaning of the poem, and that also it can very often supply a missing dimension, and that therefore it goes with poetry just as well as, for example, music goes with a good film score, with a good film, that is. The score supplies something that is missing otherwise. That is, if it's well set.
Exactly.
There is also, of course, a historical precedent. Didn't the old Greeks, when they recited, didn't they stroke a lute or a lyre and chant with it? Wasn't this the great classic tradition for all poetry reading?
As I recall, there was always a lute on hand.
And down through the ages this has been done. The Irish, the bards, the minstrels, the troubadours, the trouvères, all of them who read poetry with some kind of a musical accompaniment. And this I have tried to do. Obviously, to create a song is something else. And there are a great many poems that, when you sang them, they have a whole new and additional meaning. As we're talking about two things. We're talking about actually setting words to music and reading words to music. I feel both are considerably enhanced by the addition of music. I would be very interested to know what the opposition has to say. Well, I strongly suspect that it will be something more or less from the purist standpoint.
Yes, the purists are always with us. To get to a much more technical side of this thing, where were your songs actually recorded, Tom?
Well, the ones you're doing today, I believe, the Robert Louis Stevenson.
Yes.
Those were done at a very unique concert at the Museum of Modern Art here in New York City last March. I say unique, and it was decidedly unique because I was the only composer represented on that program. It was a full evening of my music, and I thought I was pretty lucky. In fact, being a composer of contemporary music, I think I'm pretty lucky to get anything played at all.
Indeed.
I think I'm very lucky to have it played today on the radio, but to have a whole evening of my music was a rare experience. What happened was that a very fine conductor by the name of Emmanuel Vardy, who you may know also as a violist, had organized a beautiful ensemble of strings, and he wished to give some concerts, and he and I conceived the idea of doing a series of concerts of American music, sort of one-man shows. And this was the first one, and you may be interested to know that funds for the orchestra for that evening were supplied by the Music Performance Trust Fund in cooperation with Local 802 of the American Federation of Musicians, who are very interested in preserving live music and in doing whatever they can to help live music. And they have been doing some wonderful things about helping to create performances of contemporary music. So that's how it happened. And it was a good concert. And as you will see from the quality of the performance by Miss Susan Reed, who was our guest soloist, and of the accompaniment supplied by Emmanuel Vardy and his strings, this is part of a cycle which I am composing of the famous Robert Louis Stevenson's poems, A Child's Garden of Verses. You will hear Where Go the Boats and Autumn Fires.
Thank you.
Before we talk about one of your major works, which we're to hear this afternoon, I'd like to take just a moment to tell our listeners about the special programs we have planned for their enjoyment on Anthology during the next 4 weeks. By way of a preview, or rather a curtain raiser, we'd like to play a record and see if our audience can identify two very famous voices from the past. Two stars at the American Theater in a scene from one of their biggest hits. You'll have to listen quite closely, since this transcription was taken from the original Cylinder Records, and the quality is certainly not on a par with modern standards. This much of a hint we'll give you. The play is Romeo and Juliet. I'm sure you're very familiar with the scene.
He just a scar that never felt a wound. Oh, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. See how she leans her cheek upon her hand. Oh, that I were a glove upon that hand, that I might touch that cheek.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name, for if thou wilt not be but sworn my love, and I'll no longer be a Catholic.
Shall I hear more, or shall I speak of this?
Tis but thy name that is my enemy. What's in a name, that which we call a rose? By any other name would smell as sweet. Romeo doth thy name, and for that name, which is no part of thee, take all myself.
I take thee at thy word. Call me but love, and I'll be new baptized. Henceforth I never will be Romeo.
My ears have not yet drunk 100 words that sound uttering, yet I know the sound. Art thou not Romeo and Montague?
Neither, fair maid, is either thee dislike.
How camest thou hither? Tell me, and wherefore? Not of walls of high, and hearts of line, and of faith? Yes. If any of my kinsmen find me here.
Introduce our Shakespearean festival were the actual voices of E.H. Southern and Julia Marlowe. While you're crowing about your success in identifying them, we'd like to do a little crowing about the four-week series which starts next Sunday. Concurrent with the Shakespearean festivals being held in England, in Canada, and in Denmark, we plan to bring you a wide variety of stars in many of the Bard of Avon's best-known plays. Appearing on the guest list are such names as Laurence Olivier, Alan Radle and Claire Bloom, Alec Guinness, Pamela Brown, John Barrymore, Jose Ferrer and Uta Hagen, John Gielgud, Maurice Evans, Orson Welles, Dorothy McGuire. These are just a few of the stars who will be heard in excerpts from Hamlet, Henry V, Macbeth, Julius Caesar, Romeo and Juliet, Othello, and others. In addition to the Shakespearean plays, we'll also bring you some of his sonnets and excerpts from great musical and operatic compositions which have been based on his works. So, be with us next Sunday when we begin our four-week Shakespearean festival on Anthology. And now, Tom Scott, back to you, and a very special treat for our listeners. I'm talking, of course, about your musical setting for The Ballad of the Harp Weaver. But first, before I give you the microphone, I want to point out to our listeners that if they'll turn their dials from radio to television as soon as our show goes off, they can not only hear you, but see you, which is a double treat for all of you. So on WNBT, at the end of the show, why not turn on your television set and see Mr. Scott? Now, Tom, tell us about The Ballad of the Harp Weaver.
Well, it's that very wonderful poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay. I've always loved it, and I set it back in 1947, partially because I wanted a vehicle which would extend my own repertoire as a ballad singer. I really wrote it for myself to do the narration. It's to be spoken in an original score. It was for voices with harp and strings. You will hear it, however, with, instead of the voices, oboe and French horn, and it's conducted by Emmanuel Vardy and features my friend Robert Blossom as the narrator. The Ballad of the Harp Weaver.
Shears to cut a cloth with, nor thread to take stitches. There's nothing in the house but a loaf end of rye and a harp. A harp with a woman's head nobody will buy. And she began to cry. That was in the early fall. When came the late fall, "Son," she said, "the sight of you makes your mother's blood crawl. Little skinny shoulder blades sticking through your clothes, and where you get a jacket from, God above knows. It's lucky for me, lad, your daddy's in the ground, and can't see the way I let his son go wrong." And she made a queer sound. That was in the late fall. When the winter came, I'd not a pair of breeches nor a shirt to my name. I couldn't go to school or out of doors to play. And all the other little boys passed our way. "Son," said my mother, "come, climb into my lap, and I'll chafe your little bones while you take a nap." And oh, but we were silly for half an hour or more. Me with my long legs dragging on the floor, a rock, rock, rocking to a Mother Goose rhyme. Oh, but we were happy for half an hour's time. great boy. And what would folks say to hear my mother singing me to sleep all day in such a daft way? Men say the winter was bad that year. Fuel was scarce and food was dear. A wind with a wolf's head howled about our door, and we burned up the chairs and sat upon the floor. All that was left was a chair we couldn't break, and the harp with a woman's head, nobody would take for song or pity's sake. One night before Christmas, I cried with the cold. I cried myself to sleep like a 2-year-old. And in the deep night, I felt my mother rise and stare down upon me with love in her eyes. I saw my mother sitting on the one good chair, a light falling on her from I couldn't tell where. Looking 19 and not a day older. And the harp with a woman's head leaned against her shoulder. Her thin fingers moving in the thin, tall strings were weaving wonderful things. Many bright threads from where I couldn't see were running through the harp strings rapidly. And gold threads whistling through my mother's hand, I saw the web grow and the pattern expand. She wove a child's jacket, and when it was done, she laid it on the floor and wove another one. She wove a red cloak, so regal to see. She's made it for a king's son, I said, and not for me. But I knew it was for me. She wove a pair of breeches quicker than that. She wove a pair of boots and a little cocked hat. She wove a pair of mittens. She wove a little blouse. She wove all night in the still, cold house. She sang as she worked, and the harp strings spoke. Her voice never faltered, and the thread never broke. And when I awoke, there sat my mother, with a harp against her shoulder, looking 19 and not a day older. A smile about her lips, and a light about her head, and her hands in the harp strings, frozen dead. And piled up beside her and toppling to the skies, were the clothes of a king's son, just my size.
So, Anthology number 17, dated Sunday, June 20th. Our sincere thanks to Tom Scott for being with us on this special domestic travelcade edition of our program. Next week, as I already promised you, we begin a four-week Shakespearean festival on Anthology. We've planned a rather impressive opening program with a scene from Romeo and Juliet, starring Alan Badel and Claire Bloom of the Old Vic Company, and a scene from Julius Caesar with Orson Welles and his company of players, known back in the late 30s as the Mercury Theater Company. Anthology comes to you with the cooperation of the YW and YMHA Poetry Center, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue. John Malcolm Brennan, director. The program is produced by Steve White, written and directed by Draper Lewis. Until next Sunday at 3, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading. This is WNBC, your community station in New York.